Brady's still gone, so I get to do this again. It's a privilege. I enjoy it. But talking about Baptist history today, we're going back a couple hundred years from where we were last week, 200 or 300 years, actually. But it's important to understand, and I think most here understand this, but it's important to understand that Baptists are not Protestants. They're not the same thing as a Protestant. We believe Baptists have always existed. But they don't always have the same name. They've had many different names through the years, and many times what we're being called by those who oppose us. One of the more common ones, and closer to the name Baptist, was Anabaptist. And that is what those who had Baptistic beliefs were called in the 1500s. The word Anabaptist basically means rebaptizer, and it came from the idea that people who've been baptized as babies got saved and realized that baptism was a testimony of salvation. It was after salvation. And so our enemies would have been calling us rebaptizers. To us, it was just getting baptized. It was the only real baptism. It was scriptural baptism. In 1516, in the 1500s, then the name Anabaptist would have existed. In 1516, there was a man by the name of Charles V who became ruler over the Netherlands. Now, it would be very confusing to try to explain all the different ways that kings and rulers gained different kingdoms. So he became king of the Netherlands, and then between 1516 and 1519, he then inherited Spain, and then he inherited something else, and then he became the elect for the Holy Roman Emperor, which was in Germany. So suffice it to say, within a few short years, he became a ruler over an empire that basically extended across Europe from Spain and the Netherlands to Austria and the Kingdom of Naples, and even reaching overseas to some of the Spanish Americas, which only a little bit had been discovered at this point. And next in line to become, with a group of rulers known as the Holy Roman Emperors. Now, these were officially sanctioned by the Pope as the Holy Roman Empire. And because the Pope said it, therefore it was so. So that's basically the way that worked. And he was actually the last one to be anointed by the Pope. But if you understand that during this time also was he was over Germany. And if you know a little bit about history, the year 1517, he became emperor in 1516. Year 1517, in Germany, something well-known happened that started a huge movement. There was a man by the name of Martin Luther, and he nailed his 95 Theses to the door of the church at Wittenberg and started a whole chain of events. So just, again, I'm giving the background for the man we're going to talk about. To understand this, Charles V was trying to keep an empire together and expand it. In the meantime, there were all kinds of people trying to stop him. He had the Ottoman Turks trying to encroach on it. He had people coming from all these different directions. And they said that basically about one-fourth of his time as a ruler was on the road fighting various wars. So he needed people on his side. And in the midst of all of this, the Protestant Reformation starts up. A number of people are going over to the Lutheran side, following Martin Luther. And he needed the Lutherans. So during the 1520s and 1530s, while technically Martin Luther was illegal and he was banned, Charles V began to make some concessions with the Lutherans because he needed them to help fight the wars that he was fighting. And his goal was ultimately to draw them back into the Roman Catholic Church. So to understand all this background going on, right around the same time in the 1530s, the Anabaptist movement began to grow. And while Charles V was willing to make concessions with the Lutherans, he was not with the Anabaptists. And so he began, in fact, in 1535, he received a memorandum from the Council of the Archbishop of Cologne. And it was to the effect that the Anabaptists had taken over an entire city. This occurred in the German city of Munster under the leadership of John of Leiden. And the Council of the Archbishop of Cologne was saying, you need to do something about these Anabaptists. They've got to be stopped. And so since he was very consumed with preserving his empire and all these things, on June 10th, 1535, Charles V issued a decree that anyone caught baptizing others, being baptized, or even providing hospitality to people who were being baptized were to face death, either by fire, beheading, or drowning. opponents of Anabaptists called this drowning the third baptism in their mockery of it. And they were so violent against the Anabaptists, I forget the word, there was a German word for it that meant Baptist hunters. There was a group of people, specifically their job was to go find people who were Anabaptists and have them killed. But around this time, the Anabaptist movement was growing so greatly in Switzerland and the Netherlands that in 1531, a guy who actually opposed the movement, a man by the name of Sebastian Freneck, wrote this. He said, "They soon gained a large following and baptized thousands, drawing to themselves many sincere souls who had a zeal for God. They increased so rapidly that the world feared an uprising by them, though I have learned that this fear had no justification whatsoever." Heinrich Bullinger, who was a successor to another reformer, Ulrich Zwingli, he wrote, "Anabaptism spread with such speed that there was reason to fear that the majority of the common people would unite with this sect." So against this backdrop of all of these Anabaptists still growing, but yet a great deal of persecution, a number being killed, there was a young man by the name of Cornelius Ertz-Demann. He was only 15 years old. And he had heard a little bit about Anabaptists and attended a public burning and watched one of them burned at the stake. And he was so impressed by the peace and the testimony of this man in staying true to Christ that he began to wonder what these Anabaptists were all about. Not long after, he heard of a meeting, and he went to that meeting. And after a couple weeks of talking with those Anabaptists, he came to understand his need of a Savior. He accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior. And in spite of already seeing what would happen, he requested believers' baptism, became united with the group. His change became so evident, his family feared for his safety and their safety, and they tried to settle him down. For 2 years, he remained a faithful follower of Christ. But in early 1549, he was captured in a raid. As a young man, they thought, this will be easy to get him to recant. There's no way he'll remain true. And so they began to interrogate him, which was another word for torture in those days. And he just simply answered them like this. They asked him what he believed, and he said, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the true, living Son of God, and that there is no other salvation either in heaven or on earth, either under it or above it." With an answer like that, they decided they needed to kind of up the torture a little bit. And here are just a few things that began to happen. He was locked in a filthy jail cell, left undernourished. One hand and one foot were placed in the stocks. At another time, he was hung by his hands with a heavy stone tied to his feet and then elevated and allowed to hang until he fainted. After a while, when that wouldn't work, a picture that you see on the screen there, he was placed on the rack, and then they would stretch him until the pain would become so great that he could hardly bear it. This happened, he was captured in 1849, this happened over a course of about 3 years, and in all this time, he still refused to be broken. When they realized they couldn't break him, they decided it was time for him to be killed. So on August 13th, 1552, Cornelius was taken to the marketplace of Kuhlenberg. And there he was tied to the stake, and while they were preparing to burn him, he began to pray. And the testimony says that while he was up there, he looked out in the crowd, and he saw a fellow believer. And upon seeing the fellow believer, he just got a big smile upon his face, and there smiled peacefully as they then burned him, and he died and went to heaven. Here's a young man at this time, only probably about 19 or 20 years old, yet he would not give in. For his faith, he remained true to God. And I think it's important for us to understand in a day when it's getting harder in some cases, but it's still relatively easy. We're not facing the rack. We're not facing any torture for standing true to Christ. We have this testimony before us. I think it's important to remember how important it is to stay faithful to our Master. And God's given us a number of witnesses down through the years to remind us it is possible through His grace.